Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. Today's show is a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juno. I'm Christina Michelle, your host today, and I'll be producing this show with Kelly Patterson. In honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, we're having a discussion with three guests, Renee Daniels, the lead mammographer at Bartlett Regional Hospital, and two breast cancer survivors, Ms. Queen Stewart of Anchorage, Alaska, and Ms. Deborah Thomas from Oakdale, Louisiana. Welcome, ladies. Kelly, would you mind just introducing yourself, please?
Hi, my name is Kelly Patterson. Good afternoon, Juno. We are so glad that you have tuned in with us again, and we hope that you enjoy this conversation as much as we do.
Thank you. Ms. Queen?
My name is Queen Walker. I'm originally from Memphis, Tennessee. I've been living in Alaska since 1978. I'm the mother of two children, and I work for the U.S. Postal Service.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Deborah?
Hi, my name is Deborah Thomas. I'm 54 years old. I'm a lifelong resident of Oakdale, Louisiana, and I'm a member of the Allen Parish School Board. Well, currently employed for 30 years.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And Miss Renee.
Hi, I'm Renee Daniels, and I'm the lead mammographer at Bartlett Regional Hospital. And I've been in Alaska since 1987, and I come from Washington, D.C.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to have all of you ladies here with us today. And we are doing this show in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is the month of October. We just want to raise awareness and raise education and have a very informative conversation about this topic. And we hope that you'll get a lot out of it. We are dedicating today's show to those who did not win the fight with breast cancer. Two that we would like to mention by name are Linda Sue Brown and Margaret Jack. And to anyone else who has someone in your life who did not win the battle with breast cancer, our condolences are with you. So we would like to just go ahead and start the conversation by talking to Miss Queen.
Okay.
Would you mind just sharing your story as a breast cancer survivor, just how the journey began for you and some things that you learned along the way? And I'm sure we'll have some questions as you go along. If you don't mind, we'll just ask as they come up.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in September of 2012. I was at work at the post office. I get a phone call from my OBGYN doctor saying that she has some good news and some bad news. And she asked me, which one did I want first? I said, well, tell me the bad news first. And she told me that she said, my mammogram came back and they had discovered breast cancer. And the good news was that all my appointments were already set. I had an appointment to see my first doctor in about an hour. So she had set everything up for me. So I work an hour, I would go deliver mail, go to an appointment, come back. So I had two appointments that day. And that was on a Tuesday because it was the day after Labor Day that I found out that I had breast cancer. But she had sequentially put everything in order, and I went in for surgery that Friday for my breast cancer. And when the doctor went in, amazingly enough, she came out. When I woke up, she told me, she said, well, I got good news for you. I said, what's that? She said, well, all the tissue that we took out was healthy. We actually got all your breast cancer when we did your, all my breast cancer was caught in the biopsy. From there, I talked to a range of doctors. They did discover that the type of cancer I had led to ovarian cancer. So they immediately dealt with a team of doctors from my breast cancer doctor had just came back from overseas from a conference. And so she collaborated with them and about the treatment going forward that I should have. So for the first year, I had no type of treatment. They just checked me every 2 to 3 months to make sure that everything was clear. And in the end, I had no radiation. I had no chemo. All I had to do was take tamoxifen for 5 years. And I've been cancer-free ever since.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. So this started for you in 2012, and you said it was a Tuesday that you got the phone call, and you had surgery on Friday?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. So then by the end of the year, that basically was done.
Yes.
And do you think that it was due to early detection?
Oh, I know that it was.
Okay.
I had been going backwards and forward. Detection, I did monthly breast check, but the cancer was so minute when they pulled it out that I really couldn't detect it myself. I didn't feel it. It wasn't a lump or anything like that. It was actually in my nipple. It was like two hard pea-sized calcification that was there that had the cancer in it.
Okay. All right. And did you get regular screenings, like annual mammograms?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fantastic.
Was breast cancer something that ran in your family?
Yes. My mother had breast cancer actually twice.
Oh, wow.
And then I have an uncle that has breast cancer where he had a mastectomy.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
So it was kind of like ingrained in you to always go get checked and get something.
Oh, definitely. And I stressed to my daughter the same thing since there is a history in the family that mm-hmm. she definitely has to get checked.
Did you ever get checked for the BRCA gene or one or two?
BRCA, yeah. Yeah, they did that too.
And what is that? Can we explain what that is?
It's a genetic mutation that will increase your risk for breast cancer, and it runs along the family.
Okay.
It's a very simple test.
Okay. How did you initially react? Like, what were the emotions that you were experiencing from the beginning?
Surprisingly enough, I had no fear, and I didn't get scared.
Awesome.
My doctor was such a great person that she told me, this is what you need to do. It's kind of like being back in the military and your commanding officer. This is what you do. This is already set up and you just do what you got to do. And by the time I told your grandfather and everybody else what was going on, he was like, what? You know, I didn't broadcast it or anything. I just did my treatment, did what I needed to do, and just trusted God and everything that went on.
Wow.
You know, I had a good support system from my doctor, my OBGYN, my husband, you know, and my close friends, and it worked out wonderful.
Excellent. Wow, what a wonderful story. And it's so good to hear that you didn't have any fear. I love that. And it sounds like your doctor was a big part of that, like having a plan already, you know, it was already set up for you, what
right.
you needed to do as far as next steps. And it sounds like that was really helpful. So congratulations to you. That's a very encouraging story.
Thank you.
Okay, Miss Deborah.
Hi.
Hi. If you wouldn't mind sharing with us about your journey.
I'm a 3-year survivor. February 2017, I was diagnosed. And I found my own lump. And my lump wasn't in my breast. I just learned where your breasts were and where did it start. I thought it was in my chest. And it was higher up in my chest where the mammogram didn't reach it, didn't see it. So I found it and I kept wondering. I actually went to the doctor for upper respiratory infection. And I asked her, I said, Phyllis, I said, I must have a calcium pocket or something up there. I said, I don't know what this is, but we need to go ahead and just get that out, you know. She said, well, we're going to run some tests on it. And I never thought no more about it because it wasn't in the breast.
Right.
Which I thought it wasn't the breast. So she sent me for a biopsy, and the biopsy came back that I had cancer. And I'm still in denial to today that I had cancer. But I did, and I had triple negative breast cancer, which unfortunately, I'm not like Miss Queen. I had to have everything because of the type of cancer it is. I had to have the chemo. First, I had to have the surgery, in which they wanted me to have a mastectomy, but I was in denial. So I had a lumpectomy.
Okay.
And because I couldn't make myself do it. I wanted to do it, but I couldn't make myself take it off, so I kept it. And I'm 3 years in survivor because it was caught in time. I was stage one, and it didn't spread to my lymph nodes or nothing. Even though I had 15 taken out, they made sure I was clean after the surgery. So afterwards, the only thing you can do for the type of breast cancer I have is have chemo. I forgot the name of it, but they call it the Red Devil and something else. We have to have 4 treatments of them, and then I went to 12 treatments of another one. And then I had 30 rounds of radiation. And of course, I lost hair and eyebrows and everything. And the risk of reoccurrence is high in the first 3 years, but I haven't had anything, no reoccurrence or anything, and it lessens each year it goes down. And I do a lot of work. I try to do a lot of work. Like I said, I'm trying to start an organization called Viking for Breast Cancer so we can raise money, you know, for awareness and for whatever we can, you know. Right now, we're just getting it in the work. And like I said, this year, we raised money for the Linda Brown Memorial Scholarship. And it just kicked off, and it kicked off huge. And it was only 3 of us riding, and we want to make it even bigger and better next year. Because I was in shock. I wasn't brave. I was scared. And it still shakes me up sometimes because I wanted to quit treatment. Actually, I did quit treatment. My doctor cried with me, and she told me about her mom quitting treatment. But my radiation doctor, he didn't want to do the radiation. My radiation oncologist, he sat there with my daughter in the room with me, and one was trying to be understanding, and the other one was crying, so I went back to chemo. And I'm glad I did, because I don't know what the it would have looked like if I wouldn't have finished my treatment. And I did. I finished all of them, and I'm here today to say that I'm glad I did. And I'm a big believer in, you know, your health. Because if I wasn't been attuned with my body, it could have been bad. That one little lump, knot, the size of a dime, not even a nickel, turned out to be something really big.
Wow. Wow.
Actually, I was sitting at work, and I had everybody feeling it. What is this? What is this? What is this? Oh, it's just a calcium thing. You know, it builds up in your chest. You can get that removed. So that's what was in my mind. It was never, I thought I had cancer.
Yeah.
Did they do an ultrasound on the lump area, or did they just do a mammogram?
Well, they just did a mammogram. They did the lump area after it came back. Actually, I did a mammogram before it never detected, and afterwards. They did never do the sonogram until after the biopsy to see how big it was and what it, you know, where it was located. So I didn't have a sonogram in the beginning, no. It was after I had the biopsy, I had a sonogram.
So I guess I have a question. Thank you so much for sharing, Deborah. That was incredible, and congratulations to you. What area do we check for breast cancer? Because it never crossed my mind that it could be in your chest.
Never crossed my mind.
I've heard some people say that they can be like under your arms even. So what area?
Well, your breast goes from under your arms, what they call axillary area, mm-hmm. under your arm, all the way down to underneath your breast, about an inch or so. So you can have breast tissue that spreads across your chest wall,
yeah,
all the way up under your arm and down to the very, very top of your abdomen.
Who knew? Yeah. What do you think was your biggest support system? How did you maintain your mental health during all of this?
I continued to work. I worked, I got out, I walked, I exercised. It was hard to get up in the morning. It was hard to get going. It was just hard to, chemo takes, drains you so bad, but I did it. I had to mentally make myself do it because I wasn't like physically like nauseous or sick. I could still eat, but I was really, really fatigued and my body felt heavy. And it was a struggle to just, I was exhausted. And I had to do it. I would walk every morning. I would work every day. And I'd come home, take a shower, and go to bed. I did. And mentally, I still don't think that it really dawned on me that I was as sick as I was, because I've always been the type of person to put on two faces, you know. I'm going to show everybody that I'm good. And then when I get home, I just die. Yeah.
Is there anything that you would say that you do differently now? Like, do you feel like you have like a new lease on life, or, you know, is it like one of those, I'm going to live every day like it's my last? Like, do you have any of those feelings at all, Miss Deborah and Miss Queen?
I appreciate life.
Okay.
No, I don't live each day. I live no day in fear. I just do what I need to do. Get up every morning. Since I work for the post office and I'm a letter carrier, I get plenty of exercise.
Okay.
Because I'm walking every day. And my doctor told me that was probably one of the things that helped me a lot, was because I did walk every day and I was able to keep, you know, I had to be mentally dealing with the customers, and they have to be mentally alert about my surroundings every day. So for me, that was good. I still had a purpose to get up every day.
Excellent.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Exactly. And I think that's what helped me, is just like to get out, to exercise, to go wig shopping. To go wig shopping was like a treat for me, to go do, just to get out. I never stayed in, you know, until I had to, until like my chemo days. The first week of chemo, I would drag. But the second week, right before chemo, I would try to get out and get the sunshine, the vitamin D. You know, I tried to stay as active as I could, because that's what gives you your energy. You need that energy.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, if you're just listening in, this is Christina Michelle, and I'm co-hosting today with Kelly Patterson. And we are here with our guests, Deborah Thomas and Renee Daniels and Miss Queen Walker. And we are just discussing breast cancer in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We're going to take a break here, and when we get back, we are going to hear a little bit more about each of these ladies' wonderful and inspiring stories of survival, and we're also going to hear more from Miss Renee Daniels, who is the lead mammographer at Bartlett Hospital. We'll be back in just a moment. Thank you. welcome back to our show today on a Juno afternoon. Today's show is a collaboration between KTOO and the Black Awareness Association of Juno. I am your host today, Christina Michelle. I'm co-hosting with Kelly Patterson, and we are having a discussion about breast cancer and just increasing breast cancer awareness and education in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We'd like to continue this conversation with Ms. Renee Daniels, who is the lead mammographer at Bartlett Regional Hospital. So can you share with us what exactly does a mammographer do? What does your job entail?
Well, my main job is to make sure everybody that comes into my office is comfortable and relaxed, so they can go through the procedure of a mammogram. And a mammogram is an x-ray of the breast. So basically what we do is get folks into two different positions. The first position is just coming straight in with the breast, so we can see the top and bottom of the breast. The second position is coming into the side at a slight oblique angle to look up under the arm all the way down through the body of the breast down to like about an inch below the breast. So we try to get as much breast tissue in as possible. Once we complete the mammogram, complete the paperwork, depending on what type of mammogram it is, we will go into the radiologist and sit with the radiologist to go over those images to see if we need to do any further imaging or if that patient needs to have an ultrasound.
And I am proud to say 39 years old, but I have not had a mammogram. So I have a couple of questions. This is Kelly. I'm sorry. When should I start getting mammograms? Can I ever stop getting mammograms, and do they hurt?
Well, the first question is that most of the societies out there that talk about beginning having a mammogram will say that you should start your mammogram when you're 40. And you should have a mammogram every year, every 2 years, depending on your family history. If you have a real strong family history, then you should have a mammogram every year. After 50, you can have a mammogram every year or every other year. Same reason, if you have a strong history, you want to do every year. If you don't have such a strong history, maybe every other year. And after, they say after 70, as long as you're in good health, you're still moving around and shaking and living your life, you want to go ahead and have those mammograms, because I know a lot of people around here that hike and they're like 75, 76, 77, 80. So yeah, you have the right to have preventative care just as well as anybody that's young. The one thing I did read about young Black women is that we tend to have a higher incidence of aggressive cancers, and we tend to get them earlier than 40. Wow. So you want to pay attention to when your family member had their breast cancer. Because if your family member had their breast cancer in their 30s, then you want to start doing your screenings in your 30s.
Okay.
That's good information. And you said a strong history. What would constitute a strong history in your family?
That would be a first degree relative. That would be your mother, your father, your sisters, your child, your daughter, son, any first degree relative. And if you have several, or ovarian cancer also, if you have several, then you have a strong history. I say if you had a mother and a sister, then you have a strong history of breast cancer. And it really doesn't hurt that much.
Okay.
I didn't answer that question.
I was going to say, she sure didn't answer that part, because that's been one of the biggest things that I've ever heard, is that they just smush them down flat like a pancake. And I'm sorry, but I'm not, I got a lot to smush. I'll just say that. So
that when I get folks in and they tell me the horror story, they're what we call baseline folks, folks who have not had a mammogram before. And they come in and they have that mammogram and they say, oh, that wasn't so bad. But people do have, some folks, they may be more tender. Maybe they're just more sensitive to pain than others. What we try to do is work with the patient to get enough compression to make the breast taut, so that if I put my finger right in front of the breast, that I can't push in. And that's real important, because you want the breast to be taut so that your breast is not like like your foot. Your bones all stay in one area. Your breast moves around quite a bit. It holds that breast still, so you have no motion. And the things that we look for are tiny microscopic, you know, tiny little calcification. So if you're moving, if you have any blurring, we may miss that. So the compression holds that breast still. It also makes the breast thinner. And this is important because it decreases the amount of radiation you need to penetrate that breast. We don't want to do harm by trying to do good. Okay. So as much compression as you can take, as long as the breast is taut. We used to go down as hard as we could, but nowadays it's just enough to be taut, and we always try to work with the patient so that the patients still feel comfortable that they'll come back, because it's important that people come back.
Right. Ms. Deborah and Ms. Queen, when did you start having your mammograms?
I started mine, this is Queen. I started mine about 40. Okay. Because my mother had been diagnosed.
Okay.
Yes.
I started mine about 45.
Okay.
And I have dense breasts. I have a lot of muscle in. Ever since I had my first one, they told me that it would be part of the breast cancer in me. And that I should have something, you know, sonograms and stuff, and I never pay no attention to all that. Now I do.
Now we all will.
And for Miss Renee, I've heard people talking about like a 2D ultrasound versus a 3D ultrasound. What's the difference between those two? And can you request to have one over the other? And here in Juneau, are both of them available?
Yes. And what we have, so ultrasound is another study. It's different from mammography. With mammography, we have the 2D and 3D. A 2D mammogram is what you would usually basically think of a mammogram. It's like taking a piece of paper, and you can look at the front of the piece of paper or the back of the piece of paper, but that's pretty much all you can do. Right. With a 3D, it's like taking a book and opening up the pages. You can look at every single page and see all the information there. What 3D does is that you compress the breast to whatever it's going to compress to. Say you compress it to 4 centimeters. Well, that's going to break down the image so that we can see each millimeter. So we will see 40 images.
Oh, wow.
So that we can see throughout the breast. And when it fans through that, if you see something that you think is solid, sometimes as you fan through, you see it melt away to nothing. But if it is solid, then it will continue and look like it's solid. This is one of the ways we decrease callbacks, because we can actually see more with a 3D. And folks can request if they want a 2D or 3D. Here in Juneau, we do both 2D and 3D in the one shot with one compression and get both at the same time. But if patients don't want the 3D, then they can just do the 2D and have that done.
Okay. I'm wondering about the mind-body connection and this condition. Have you heard anything about it? Have you observed anything? What do you believe? I ask this question because there are some books that I've read about the mind-body connection with different diseases, and seeing a trend in certain like emotional states, or even women who've experienced certain types of trauma or things that they're carrying in their subconscious mind or in their emotions and other diseases. And I'm wondering if you've observed or if you've heard about a connection like that with breast cancer.
Well, emotions and stress, and what I've learned, that thinking positive and relaying it, affirmations, help deal with a lot of stress and emotions that you have with illness. You know, if you believe in something, if you believe you heal, then more than likely you're going to feel healed. You're going to go and get better results. So your mind does play a lot on your illness. Let's say pain. if you work your way, if you walk your way through pain, if you always tell yourself, instead of saying, oh, I'm hurt, you say, no, I feel well, you know, you start talking to yourself and, you know, letting it go, pain, you know, eases. You know, I have neuropathy from radiation. I'm like, oh my God, I can't walk. Oh, yes, I can. I can go. I can get up and do it. So that mind-body experience, it does happen, you know. But you have to put yourself into that position where your mind is being positive and let go all the negative. Because that negative energy, it feeds on your illnesses and that stress. And so you need to take out all the negative and put in that positive. And you start feeling better immediately.
Yeah. That's so good to hear you say, because it's something that I am a strong believer in. And, you know, sometimes you feel like, you know, you don't want to sound like you're oversimplifying something by telling somebody that it really, you know, the power of their mind is so strong, you know, but it really is the truth. You know, we always have a choice. We don't have a choice in what happens to us, but we have a choice in how we process it and how we deal with it and how we deal with it. It sounds like it was part of why you were successful in your recovery.
I think also that it helps when you surround yourself with positive people, that it'll be in your corner and not speak negativity into your life. But if, you know, if it's a day you don't feel well, acknowledge that you don't feel well and then think of something that you can do to help yourself feel better.
Yes.
And if it's eating in a bowl of ice cream, eat the bowl of ice cream.
Exactly.
If you practice mindfulness, is really just to feel present in where you are now. Mm-hmm. And I just, my sister practiced that, and I believe that really helped her go through the situation that she had gone through. She had already had gone through trauma before, and then to have this breast cancer. She did the same thing you guys did. She stayed positive. She tried to stay healthy. And she tried to use some mindfulness just to feel present.
Perfect. Good. I like that. And that's nice. You know, when you work on your mind and your body, like that's something you can do for yourself. But how can other people support someone with breast cancer? Do you mind like going into a little bit of that? Like if someone you know has breast cancer, what was something that helped you specifically that you would encourage people to do to help someone who's battling breast cancer or just found out they have breast cancer? Can you guys talk on that maybe a little bit?
I've talked to a couple of people when they first found out they had breast cancer, and I encouraged them, number one, to admit that, you know, they're scared or they you know, they feel in a certain type of way, because bottling those feelings up inside does not help, but to express them and then just to be a listener. Sometimes you don't have to say anything, just to be a good listener, and then don't say, oh, I know how you, I mean, if you've experienced it and you kind of know how they feel, say that, but don't lie to them, you know.
Right.
You know, just be open and be honest, and then just explain to them that whatever you need me to do, I'm here for you to help you through this journey. It's not going to always be good days. There are going to be some bad days. But, you know that you're not in this battle by yourself.
Exactly. I surround myself with positive energy and spiritual. I try to stay very spiritual and, you know, in the Lord. And that's what really got me, being spiritual and keeping my mind focused on what I was going through, you know, and the healing process and being grateful that I was able to have people around me and being grateful and mindful that, I mean, I'm doing this and I have all my family, all my friends, they're here with me, and I just tried to stay positive, and I was so grateful for my team, my doctors, you know, and I have a book of affirmations that, you know, I practice affirmations, and it got me through, and still gets me through, because just because you've had cancer, well, just because I'm a survivor, I'm a fighter doesn't mean that it doesn't come back into your mind when it comes back or if it comes back, because it's always there. But you have to keep going, and like Miss Queen said, don't live in fear. You know, face it head on, and you know you can get through it. And it's not gonna be no all roses in bed and a woe is me. It just is what it is. Yeah. And you have to deal with it.
Perfect. Thank you so much, ladies, for sharing that with us.
Miss Renee, I have a question about the survival rate, because we tend to hear a lot about those who did not survive. I guess what my question is, do you know what the survival rate is? Because I could be wrong, but I feel like we do hear a lot more about those who have passed than those who survived, and I'm wondering if that's a skewed view.
Well, unfortunately, the only thing I could find was the mortality rate. And what I found from 2017, that out of 276,000 women, 42,000 passed away from their breast cancer. And in the lifetime risk for breast cancer, white women have a 13% chance of getting breast cancer, and black women have 12% chance. However, even though we have a lower chance of getting, it's slight, but we have a lower chance of getting breast cancer, we have a 39% chance, increased chance of dying of that cancer than white women. I wish I had found some survival rates, but all the rates I found were a mortality rate. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. And that actually speaks to my point, you know, that we do tend to hear a lot more about the mortality of this than about the survivors. But I'm just doing the math really quick. If there's 276,000, is that like the estimate of what's who's diagnosed annually?
Cases, that's from 2017, yes.
Cases, okay. And then, so yeah, if there's 276,000 and then 42,000 of them don't survive, then that means there's still 230,000 women who do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, breast cancer is one of the most curable cancers there are. It depends on the tumor. It depends on when the tumor was found. But it is one of the cancers that are curable.
Yeah. So that's good. That's good news. And that's something that I just wish the positive of anything was broadcasted more often. And so I'm glad that we're able to talk about this, because I know, you know, for myself and possibly for others who are listening, fear can be one of the biggest demotivators for me. Like, I'm like, I don't want any parts of that. Like, so I'm not like, if all I'm hearing is the bad about that, then that does not motivate me to go get, you know, checked, or that doesn't move me to action. It actually moves me away from it. So I think having these conversations and getting educated and getting information about it is very empowering.
Yeah, that's important. You know, you can help yourself by doing simple things. You know, even if you get breast cancer, if you can find it early enough, you can know what your risks are, know what your family risk is, you know if you have that gene, get screened, go in and get the mammogram. One of the things that black women are less likely to go have their mammogram done. Go get a mammogram, tell somebody you know, get their mammogram done, and know what's normal for you. Know your breasts. A lot of folks won't even touch their breasts, but know your breasts. Know if you have simple lumps that you've had all your life in your breasts, and know that something's different. So Deborah, you found something that was different. You hung on to it. And no matter what anybody said about that mammogram, you stepped forward and you went ahead and advocated for yourself. And that's what women need to do. If you feel something in between your mammogram, go get seen. Because you can get a cancer in between the mammograms. They'll think you have to wait to the annual mammogram to go in and get seen. Yeah. So you can do things to help yourself to find that cancer early, to have that positive outcome.
And I have a question about, if you do find something in between, or let's say you don't find something in between your annual mammograms, like how quickly does the cancer spread or mature?
It really depends on the tumor. You can have a tumor that's fed by estrogen, that tumor would grow rather rapidly. I couldn't tell you by time how quickly it would grow, mm-hmm. but it would grow faster than a tumor that was not fed by estrogen.
Okay. So someone mentioned, Ms. Queen, was it you who said that your brother had breast cancer?
My uncle.
Your uncle. Okay. All right. So what is the percentage of men who get breast cancer? Because I didn't even know that that was possible.
Go ahead. Breast cancer in men is like 1% of breast cancers that are discovered. But the incidence of breast cancer in Black men is actually like a 0.5 above of white men. So just like white women and Black women, the incidence of breast cancer is would be higher in Black men than there are in white men. And so the same thing goes for men and women. You go get a mammogram, you get that checked. If you see something that's odd or you feel something that's odd, you go get that checked, even though you're a guy, because you can't have breast cancer.
Okay. Thank you.
Interesting. And men who have mastectomies.
They do have a mastectomy.
I didn't know that.
Yes. My uncle had to have a mastectomy.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. And is breast cancer screening for men something that automatically happens, or should they be telling, you know, their primary doctor that breast cancer runs in their family and then their doctor would check for it, or should men be doing self-checks like women should be?
Well, men should certainly see if they see something different in their chest. Usually they can see it, or if they feel something, then they pay attention to that. They should check it. We don't do screening for men because it's such a low percentage. But mm-hmm. if a man sees something that feels something, then they definitely need to contact their doctor. And if they do have a strong family history, a first degree relative, then they should inform their physician of that. They won't get screening, but if they do feel a lump, then they probably come in for a mammogram and an ultrasound.
Okay. And for women, how often should we be doing self-checks? Or should we be doing self-checks? Do they actually work?
Well, they kind of go back and forth. They shouldn't do it. You should do it. I think it doesn't hurt not to do it. Being familiar with your body, knowing what's going on, you're going to probably be the first person who knows that something is not right. And you're going to be the person to say, hey, I need to go see my doctor and get this taken care of. So as long as more familiar you are with your breast tissue, you know, do that old-fashioned breast exam, just knowing once a month, like say after your period, check your breast tissue, see if it's changed.
Does breast tissue change often in women?
It changes in women during the cycle. It can become more painful, kind of feel more lumpy during your cycle. So you want to make sure, you know, this is kind of something normal.
So are there any preventative lifestyle tips that you recommend, Renee, from a medical standpoint? Like, Are there certain eating habits or lifestyle changes that one should be aware of or avoidant, stress factors, anything like that? And I know this is probably like one of those questions that might be hard to answer. I think as a society, we tend to want to control things, you know, and so maybe there's nothing. Maybe it's just one of those things that happens. But if there were anything we could do to prevent this, what might it be?
Well, just like for anything for general health, eat right, exercise, you know, take care of yourself. You know, there's like no magic bullet. As long as we feed our bodies good food, and treat our bodies well, even if we do get sick, we're still ahead of the game because we've got a body that's strong and has been nourished and is ready to fight whatever that is trying to get you, breast cancer or whatever it is.
Where can people go to get screened for breast cancer here in Juneau? If you don't have any medical insurance or if you just want to get a free screening, do we have any services that provide for anything like that here in town?
Yes, we have this wonderful service called First Ladies, and they do breast and cervical cancer. They help pay for breast and cervical cancer screenings. You can get one free if you're qualified. And if you're on Medicaid, you're definitely qualified. And it's and if you're 250% above the poverty level, you're qualified. So that breaks down to a family of four that make $81,000 a year. They would qualify for a free screening, a cervical screening, or a free breast screening.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And we're just going to take a moment here to take another quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're just going to talk about anything else that you would like to add that we didn't talk about today. So we will be right back. Hello, Juno, and we are back from commercial break. If you're just tuning in, this is Christina Michelle. I am here with Kelly Patterson, and we are doing a collaboration with KTOO and the Black Awareness Association today, talking about breast cancer in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We've been here having a wonderful conversation with Ms. Deborah Thomas and Ms. Queen Walker and Ms. Renee Daniels. And as we close out, I just want to ask, is there anything that we did not talk about today that you would like to add that you think would be helpful for our listeners to know, either about your experience in breast cancer survival or, Renee, for you from a medical perspective?
I would like to say that don't suppress what's happening with you discuss it with your family. You know, keep them in the loop because they care about you. And then sometimes they live in fear and they're starting to act out because you're not discussing or telling them what's really going on with you. I know a lot of us are private, but you have to be concerned about the other people that are trying to be a part of your inner circle to support you.
Great advice. Thank you, Ms. Queen.
And I would like to say, don't skip your mammograms. Don't skip taking care of yourself because you only have one you. Get out there and exercise, eat right, and do your monthly checkups with yourself, and just be the best you can be.
Awesome. Thank you, Ms. Deborah.
And I would like to give the phone number to Ladies First. That number is 1-800-410-6266. And they can get you set up right away. It doesn't take very long to have them go through your information and get you set up to have that screening mammogram. The other place in town that's really helpful with folks who are recovering or discovering that they have cancer is Cancer Connection. Now, I don't have their phone number, but you can Google them. And they are a very helpful organization. They're there to support folks with cancer.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, ladies. This has been such an informative conversation. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. You're welcome.